are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, January 8th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, editor of Think Justice, Ian Millhiser. On the SCOTUS and gerrymandering, as well as Trump's fraudulent emergency. Speaking of which, tonight at 9 Eastern, must-see TV, as all major networks run the second season of The Caravan. Meanwhile, will Trump's fake emergency lead to a fake wall, which will end the real government shutdown crisis? Meanwhile, Trump's education department to make for-profit colleges more for-profity and less college-y. In Syria, Turks and Kurds ready for all-out war. And with Americans learning more about traditional marginal tax rates, AOC has already won. And it turns out that so-called skills gap we kept hearing about? Not so much. And speaking of which, about those terrorists at the border... Well, they're already issuing apologies in the White House for overstating the number by nearly 3,000%. All that and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I now am in, I think this is the, you know, the other day we had our 2000th episode. Totally forgot about it.
Yeah, Fred, I didn't even notice until I was numbering the show.
Just apathetically steamrolled right through
we
it.
We apathetically steamrolled through that in a grotesque fashion. So happy 2000th episode to us. I can't even imagine now. Let's see. That's been 8 years. So 2000 over 8 years. And I think prior to that, so I got to be pushing somewhere around 3,200 episodes, just period. So good luck to my kids combing through all of those. Also, I should say, I'm celebrating now almost, I think this is the fifth day, which I have not said 2018. At the beginning of the announcements of the show. So I'm pretty excited about that. Folks, the 2020 presidential campaign has started at least, pretty much in earnest. And we have pictures that a listener sent in from two nights ago, I guess it was. Was it two or three nights ago when Elizabeth Warren was in Iowa? And apparently, these are from a listener, Irma, in Des Moines. People were excited to see Elizabeth Warren. I don't know if you can see that, but that is like at least two blocks worth of, well, now make that three, four blocks of people lined up in Iowa to see Elizabeth Warren. And... you know, there's a lot of excitement on the ground for Elizabeth Warren. These narratives get built. There was, you know, people forget, but in 2014, maybe it was 2012, Elizabeth Warren was brought into, I think it was 2012, brought into a campaign for people like Claire McCaskill and others. She was an asset around the country to a lot of people. And she's obviously creating a certain amount of consternation amongst folks in the center right And ostensibly in the, I guess, the right side of the, and by right, I mean in terms of their politics, of the Democratic Party. Here is Stephen Ratner on Morning Joe. Stephen Ratner, you may recall, was in charge of the, I think, the GM bailout. And, of course, also was charged by the SEC with a pay-to-play scheme involving the New York State Pension Fund back in his days as a private equity guy. And, you know, who amongst us has not had to settle with the SEC to pay a $6.2 million fine for overstepping you know, some of the fudging around the edges of things.
What is a kickback, really?
Really, honestly.
More like an opportunity.
But here is Stephen Ratner on Morning Joe talking about some of the hesitation they may have. You know, I think sometimes you show your hand a little bit too early. Like, you're supposed to hold your cards a little bit closer to your vest. But I think... some people are so deep into the bubble that they really, really don't even realize what they're exposing about themselves.
So, well, Steve Ratner, I know that we don't usually, Mika and I don't usually go to political fundraisers.
Pause it for 1 second. I just need to laugh.
I knew okay. that was a well-warranted and certain pause it coming.
Right. Yeah. There we go. Let's just. All right. I'm sorry.
I don't usually go to political fundraisers for a lot of different reasons. But I'm just curious, when you hold your political fundraiser for Elizabeth Warren,
Steve,
can we just be sort of some flies on the wall? Because we really would love to be there and just see the warm embrace of Elizabeth's the respected senator's populism.
Well, you won't be a fly on the wall, because if I hold a fundraiser for Elizabeth Warren and I go to my friends to ask them to attend, it will be a very sparse crowd. And so there'll be room for you to sit right up at the head of the table next to her and enjoy the full. No, look, in all seriousness, I think everything that you've talked about and Karen wrote about Elizabeth Warren and her appeal and her passion and her populism is all true. And I think it will resonate to some degree in the Democratic Party. I would note she doesn't poll as well as some other Bernie Sanders in particular candidates who are espousing the same point of view, and she's trying to fix certain image issues, and we can go through all that. But the real question is, when you get to the general election, will a candidate who is so, in effect, anti-capitalism, anti-business, anti-Wall Street, anti-rich, anti a lot of things, will that prevail even against Donald Trump? And
is that it? Oh, let's hear him waffle on a little bit more. I'm curious.
Will that prevail even against Donald Trump in a general election? And I think there are those of us in the Democratic Party, and this is not personal about Elizabeth, who I think has a lot of great personal qualities and is certainly a very devoted public servant. But is that really the type of candidate we want to put into a general election, even up against Donald Trump?
Yeah, I mean, of course it is. The proposals that she espouses are wildly popular. You want to put up a candidate who says we need to protect Wall Street, we need to protect the big banks, we need to protect the very wealthy in this country because they're not getting their share. Good luck to you. I mean, what's amazing about this is that he is so divorced from reality, so unaware of what the average American feels towards what's happened in our society, that he doesn't even realize that what he should be saying is that I'm not sure that Elizabeth Warren has the charisma, or that he's got it completely backwards. He's already showing his cards in a way that I think is just a fascinating revelation about how completely divorced from reality guys like this are. They don't even have the savvy to hide the fact that they're sitting there and shilling for essentially, I mean, not enough people to even fill out a neighborhood in New York City. Oh. Well, maybe in Manhattan. Maybe just the island, half of Manhattan. Side,
maybe. A few but towers.
Not, but, yeah, I was going to say, but not even really, because the Upper East Side is actually bigger than people think.
It's absolutely stunning. I mean, there are, you know, I just don't understand how someone can go on. And I'm not saying any candidate is above critique, but I don't know, understand how anyone can go on television and say those things and think that they're actually making an argument that helps themselves. I mean, because all of the people who watch Morning Joe, or not all, but a significant amount, they may already feel those things, but they should be hiding the ball. That's what the Republican Party did for decades.
Well, serious point and frivolous point. And serious point is, I do think there is something specific about Morning Joe in that it's like a feedback loop, elite to elite conversation. So there's something maybe about just policing the boundaries of what's acceptable inside that specific conversation that happens on that show. Maybe,
but that's the thing. It's like, I understand. You can
I get
a little
it.
More wink, wink.
I
nudge,
understand.
Nudge.
I get it. I agree. But I do think sometimes when you watch that show, the only part of that show that has any kind of public value is, it's probably the closest to being in like Steve Rattner's townhouse talking
right.
show. And it's like, yes. This is how they think. This is what the mentality is. Frivolous point. That was a much more boring version of the Anna Navarro, get my love juices flowing clip from
right.
the other day.
Can we play that drop? Can we get a candidate that myself and Bill Kristol will appreciate?
No, me and Bill Kristol don't like overt racism, and we like Jawar. And so maybe if the Democrats could do that with a certain degree of class, Bill Kristol and I could be excited.
Unbelievable.
I do think he was ridiculous in the end, but I do think he had a serious point towards the beginning, which is that she does have similar politics to Bernie Sanders, but is not as compelling a candidate
that's
in
true.
The general election.
I mean, that's possible. I mean, we got, you know, Bernie Sanders is, you know, if you had talked about Bernie Sanders 6 months before he ever ran for office, he would be polling nowhere. On a public level. Of course, he was a senator, and people were aware of him. But I think we will get a better sense of Elizabeth Warren's national appeal when she's on a national stage, and it's not because Mitch McConnell's saying, hey, you can't read Coretta Scott King's words on the Senate floor. When she gets out and she has the ability to control the narrative, that's, I think, when you judge. Bernie Sanders, you know, what he polled before he entered the race, 6 months before he entered the race, was zero. I mean, maybe it was three. I don't know. But
sure.
Well, he did it with a certain degree of class, is what James is
trying to. I am begging Democrats to please give me somebody that I can vote for.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm just a little worried that she's going to get all of the bad parts of being like Bernie and none of the good parts. You know, like these folks like this guy are always going to say she's an anti-capitalist, no matter how many times she says, I'm
a
capitalist.
There is no doubt in my mind that Steve Rattner will vote against Elizabeth Warren. But I suspect that if you were to take a poll of women, particularly the women who drove this last midterm election, that it's quite possible Elizabeth Warren would be at the very least competitive with Bernie Sanders.
If Rattner, if Sanders or Warren, and potentially Sherrod Brown is the nominee, Steve Rattner will write in Erskine Bowles.
There you
That's
go.
That's my
exactly.
prediction.
Folks, one of today's sponsors is Skillshare. And the first 500 people who go to skl.sh/majority are going to get 2 whole months of totally free access to Skillshare's entire library of super quality online courses and tutorials. Skillshare is a vibrant online learning community that offers courses on everything from design to video editing, photography, business, technology, cooking, meditation, everything in between. There are Skillshare courses for everyone. You're going to have no problem finding any courses that are useful to you both in your personal life and your professional life.
Whether you want to sharpen your skills with something you already love doing or you want to learn how to do something totally new, Skillshare has you covered. They have courses for entrepreneurs, courses on computer coding, web development, personal nutrition, learning new languages, Photoshop, you name it. I had suggested before the break that I was going to look into accounting. I didn't. I got caught up in a couple of woodworking classes. But nevertheless, I'm a better person for it.
You ever smoke a corn cob pipe when you do that?
No. When I watch videos?
No, when you do your woodworking. No.
Oh, yeah. No.
A little raccoon hat. It's like, I do my project.
Raccoon hat?
Like a Jimmy Davy Crockett or whatever the hell.
Sam ain't no corn cob.
Yeah, there's no Davy Crockett. I mean, I think you're...
I'm mixing genres here. It's not a lot of different genres.
No, woodworking and...
Okay, how about a corn cob
and
pipe?
Woodwork. Pioneering the West. Two different things. You but get related. 2 entire months of free access to every single course offered by Skillshare by going to skl.sh/majority. Just think of everything you'll have at your fingertips for 2 whole months. Again, that's skl.sh/majority. Put a link underneath this video. I put a link in the podcast description. Check it out. Quick break. When we come back, Ian Millhiser on the gerrymandering cases heading to the Supreme Court and perhaps the legality of what we anticipate Donald Trump will be doing tonight on television. Be right back. We are back, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program the editor of the justice editor for thinkprogress.org, Ian Millhiser. Ian, welcome back to the program.
It's good to be here. Thanks so much.
All right. Let's start with the gerrymandering cases that are heading to the Supreme Court, because there is a fairly significant backstory to these gerrymandering cases and the gerrymandering cases that have been in front of the Supreme Court. And there's a fairly troubling, future story that could be happening here. Tell us, just give us a little bit sense of the history of gerrymandering cases that have gone to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, this is going to end really badly. So the relevant history here probably begins with 2004. A case called V. Jubilee. Justice Scalia wrote an opinion on behalf of 4 members of the court saying that not only are we not going to strike down the gerrymander that's being challenged in this case, but our view, the view of these 4 justices, is that partisan gerrymandering is just not a matter for federal courts at all. Federal courts can never consider a partisan gerrymandering case. Justice Kennedy gave people a little bit of hope in that case, though, because he wrote a separate opinion where he said, you know, I'm not going to strike down this gerrymander, but in a future case, you might be able to convince me there's a standard I could use to sort out which gerrymander is not allowed. And so that was the hope that people brought into the last Supreme Court term, where they thought there's this terrible Wisconsin gerrymander, there's this very aggressive Democratic gerrymander in Maryland. Surely we can get Justice Kennedy to say that these crossed the line and people had some really, you know, promising legal theories. Well, Justice Kennedy decided to punt the issue, and he decided to punt the issue, and then a few days later he left the court.
And go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, the hopes for Kennedy were that he had specifically asked for, basically had asked to social scientists, I guess, broadly speaking, come up with a way in which we can measure when something has been overly gerrymandered. And in fact, social scientists did that with a concept of wasted votes, right?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, that, so Kennedy had said, look, I need, it's hard to determine which maps are partisan gerrymanders and which ones aren't. I need something objective, something clear cut that lets me sort bad maps from good maps. And there were a bunch of theories that people came up. They were basically just mathematical formulas where you could take the records from the last election, plug it into this formula, and that would tell you if this map was likely to be a gerrymander or not. And so people were really, really hopeful. I mean, I remember attending the oral argument in the Wisconsin case and thinking, oh, yeah, we've got five votes. Like, they're going to strike this map down. Things are going to get better soon. And that is just not what happened. Kennedy decided not to decide the case, and then he decided to give the middle finger to everyone that was hoping that he would stick around and retain some semblance of the rule of law in this country. And Trump replaced him with Brett Kavanaugh, who, of course, threatened Senate Democrats at his confirmation hearing, said that what goes around comes around, because Democrats dared to probe allegations that Kavanaugh tried to rape someone.
And we should say, in terms of Wisconsin, the theories, I guess the algorithms that would determine wasted votes, seem to be borne out when you look at the results of the last election, where Democrats won, what was it, 54% of the vote, and Republicans took 63% of the seats in the state house.
That's right.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So
I mean, that's, yeah, just like I want everybody just to sort of like marinate in that. We are, you know, this is not the Senate being appointed by landowners. You know, this is not the Senate set up as a way of not being particularly democratic in terms of the number of people representing. This is on a fairly localized level where you have a 54% to 46% split. That's like what we would call a landslide, right? I mean,
I mean, Wisconsin, for all intents and purposes, is no longer a Democratic state. Like, I mean, they have a democratically elected governor who, as of I think yesterday, is a Democrat. But their legislature, it is impossible. I mean, absent, like, maybe if Democrats manage to get 60 or 70% of the vote, it would happen. But that's not happening in Wisconsin. It is impossible for Democrats to win the state assembly when you have a map where you can get 54% of the vote and the other party still gets 63% of the seat. So that's how aggressive this gerrymander is that Justice Kennedy looked at and said, you know, instead of doing something about this, I'm just going to leave it to Brett Kavanaugh. So that's the position we're in right now. And what I think is likely to happen now that these cases are back, this time it's a North Carolina gerrymander, which is almost as aggressive as the Wisconsin one, plus the Maryland case again. And what's likely to happen is, I think you've got five votes right now to just say, you know what? Gerrymandering is not the business of the federal courts. Federal courts will never do anything about gerrymandering. And if you're an entrenched political party who that wants to ensure that you never lose control of your state legislature again, go to town.
That's a pretty convenient timing for a Republican Supreme Court to be making that proclamation. And we should say there's a case in Maryland, right, that is also that is being brought against Democrats as a way of basically trying to just get the gerrymandering under some measure of control.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the Maryland case, it's one of the few states. So part of the history here is that Republicans had a great electoral year in 2010. And a big problem with our system is that New maps must be drawn every 10 years, every time there's a new census. And so if you happen to win, if your party happens to win the year that ends in zero, that means you don't just get control for 2 years or until the next election. It means you also get to draw the state legislative and the congressional maps. And so since Republicans swept through basically all the swing states in 2010, they were then able to draw these maps that entrenched their power. And now, you know, going into the 2020 census and then going into the next round of redistricting, in states where Republicans still control the legislature and can't be dislodged, you know, in some states maybe Democrats will be able to capture the governor's mansion. And so they'll be able to at least veto the worst gerrymanders. But Republicans have a huge advantage in these states because they're guaranteed to control the legislature. And there's even some states, in North Carolina, I believe, the governor doesn't have the power to veto a redistricting map.
And that so
Republicans
was,
base,
and that was, oh, we should ahead. Say, that was from a lame duck session in North Carolina, like the one that was done in Wisconsin, although Evers doesn't seem to be basically saying, like, you can sue me in terms of abiding by those laws. But if I remember correctly, the reason why the Democratic governor in North Carolina can't veto it is because of laws that were passed in the lame duck, basically stripping him or, you know, her in the future of their ability to do that. Well, Ian.
Yeah. I'm not sure about the origins there, but, like, you know, the point is that, you know, they have managed not just to entrench their rule for 10 years, but potentially managed to entrench their rule permanently, because the only way to dislodge Republicans from their control of the state legislature is for Democrats to win a state legislative race that cannot be won because Republicans drew the map.
Now, there seems to me to be a very sensible and rational way to deal with this. If the state, the citizens of the state vote to create like an independent commission. These things are never perfect,
right?
But at least an independent commission would have some semblance of neutrality to some extent. Right. So that seems like the most rational decision that can be made. But ..
Yeah. Right. So a lot of states, you know, Arizona has one. California has one. You know, quite a few states. I think, you know, Michigan and Wisconsin just passed ballot initiatives whose purpose is to make it harder to gerrymander, or at least Michigan did. But the problem is that. A few years ago, there was a case challenging the Arizona Redistricting Commission. And the good news is that the Supreme Court voted 5-4 to say, yes, you can have this redistricting commission. The bad news is that the fifth vote was, guess who? Anthony Kennedy. And Anthony Kennedy's been replaced by Bardo Kavanaugh, who said that he's going to take revenge on Democrats. So there is a very high likelihood that these independent commissions are going to come before the Supreme Court again, that there will now be 5 votes to strike them down. And that means that the Supreme Court will make gerrymandering even worse than it already is.
What is the possible justification for striking down these independent commissions?
Sure. So the Constitution says that as a general rule, legislative maps shall be drawn by the state legislatures. I think it says by the legislator thereof, which thereof referring back to the state. And so the argument is that the word legislature in that context means the elected body of lawmakers who typically make laws. The problem with that argument is that there's at least a century of precedent saying that in this context, that's not what the word legislature means. So the word legislature means anybody in a state that is empowered to make laws. So that can be, for example, a ballot initiative. But what the dissenters argued in the Arizona case is that they argued that only the state legislature and not a ballot initiative is permitted to rein in gerrymandering.
But isn't there, I mean, and I guess maybe you've just answered that by saying that there's a century of precedent, but we see this all the time where the legislature can farm out their authority, right? And either affirmatively or by the nature of the I guess, the constitution of the state.
Right. Yeah. And actually, I mean, under the theory of the dissenters, things would get really, really troubling. I mean, if you take their argument seriously, you know, does that mean that a governor cannot veto a redistricting bill because the governor is not the legislature? He is the executive. And therefore, in states like, say, Wisconsin, where Democrats are counting on the Democratic governor to veto the next Republican gerrymander, that the governor can't do that. Does that mean that in states like Pennsylvania, where the state Supreme Court struck down the gerrymander, that, well, the judiciary is the judiciary, not the legislature. So maybe the judiciary isn't allowed to weigh in. And so this could take us to a world, if you know, the dissenting view in the Arizona case ultimately prevails, where the only people who are allowed to draw maps are legislatures, which are controlled by Republicans, because Republicans entrenched themselves in the 2010 election. And as it turns out, the 2010 election is the only election that'll ever matter again, because, you know, once you gain control of the state legislature, it's impossible to dislodge the party that controls it.
Is there any way that, and now these cases in North Carolina and Maryland don't necessarily implicate a referendum for creating an independent commission. Is there any way that the court, I mean, I know there's probably a way, but is there, what's the likelihood of the court saying, hey, and incidentally, even though this is not at issue in this case, since we're here, we might as well also say independent commissions, not kosher.
I don't think that they'd strike down independent commissions in either the North Carolina or in the Maryland case, because neither one of those states has an independent coalition or independent commission. But all it takes, I mean, Arizona could do it again. You know, all it takes is for Republicans to file the exact same lawsuit they filed in Arizona a few years ago. They can even dust off the same brief that they filed and just refile them. And, you know, now it goes up to the Supreme Court again, and the Supreme Court says, ah, there were four of us last time, but there's five of us now, you lose.
That would seem like a, you know, pretty nakedly partisan a ruling, wouldn't it? But do you think they care?
I mean, maybe they care. I mean, that is the question on which the rule of law in this country hinges, is, and not specifically who, if they care, but if Chief Justice John Roberts cares. I mean, there are, you know, the angel and the devil sitting on Roberts's shoulder. Is he has a devil that says, oh, you just want conservatives to win everything, you should do that. And he has an angel who says, you know, if you push too hard, then the Supreme Court's going to be delegitimized. People are going to stop listening to your decisions, and that's going to undermine your ability to enact conservative policies in the long run. And the question is whether he listens to the angel or he listens to the devil. And I mean, no one but John Roberts knows who he's going to listen to in any given case.
I like how John Roberts' angel is just a sort of pragmatically evil devil. I mean, he's just
a little bit. Yeah, no. Like, there's nothing good.
There's the devil, and then there's just the more pragmatic devil that sits on his shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, there's the lawful evil John Roberts, and there's the chaotic evil John Roberts. And, you know, you never know which one's going to prevail.
All right. So with that said, we will keep an eye on that. We are probably at least a year away, I guess, from the potential of the independent commissions being struck down. And, you know, because of the nature of, like, if you can get a democratically elected governor, you can get a referendum like we've seen in Michigan to have an independent commission, which could be, you know, the sort of the last saving grace. So I guess we're a year away from finding out whether, at the very least a year away, is it possible they could take another case this late?
I mean, they could potentially take a case, but I don't think that there's one. I don't think there's one in the works.
Okay.
I mean, what has, you know, the saving grace is that someone has to file the case. It has to go to the district court. The district court has to, like, say, hey, this is the exact same case that the Supreme Court decided 3 years ago, go away. And then that goes up to the Supreme Court. So that will take time. There is, however, plenty of time for the Supreme Court to decide something like that before the 2020 redistricting cycle.
Great. All right. Well, let's turn to something else that's probably going to be as equally as disturbing. Tonight, Donald Trump is going to go on television.
Yeah.
And he is going to tell us that our lake houses in Minnesota are subject to being rampaged by another caravan or something to that effect. And he's going to have to declare a national emergency. What, and I guess ostensibly to build, yeah, to build a mile and a half stretch of a wall or a slat or whatever, a steel cladding. What does he have? Give me your sense from a legal perspective. Like, how does this go down?
So, I guess there's two questions here. Like, the one question is, so what Trump is apparently contemplating is he's going to declare a national emergency and then say, because there is an emergency, I can now order the U.S. military to go build the wall, even in the absence of congressional authorization or an appropriation allowing me to do so. And, you know, the answer to the question, like, if you asked me to, like, read the statutes myself, if I were the judge, I would look at them and say, no, he can't do that. But that's not the important question, whether this is legal or not. The important question is whether this Supreme Court will pretend it's legal because they're Republicans and so is Donald Trump. And I think it's likely they're going to say it is. I mean, I've been looking at the statutes, I've been staring at them all day, and it's not as clear cut as I hoped it would be. I mean, basically what it turns on is that there's a federal law saying that Trump can declare an emergency, and then he can authorize construction projects, provided that the emergency is for, you know, requires the use of the military. And so I don't think this requires the use of the military. There's no reason, like, the reason why Trump can't build his wall isn't that there's some emergency and the only way to address it is to send troops. The reason why Trump can't build his wall is because he's unable to convince Congress to pass a law letting him build the wall. So in my mind, that's not an emergency that requires the use of the military. I mean, among other things, building isn't something that you need troops to do. You know, civilians can build things just fine. But you go to war with the Supreme Court you have, not the Supreme Court you want. And there is a long line of precedent saying that as a general rule, courts should defer to the president in matters of national security. I think that if there are five people in the Supreme Court who want to side with Donald Trump, and there probably will be, it'll be possible to write a judicial opinion that passes the last test, arguing that he can do this, and that's all they need.
Who would have standing to bring this case? I mean, who would sue? I mean, I guess ostensibly probably Congress, yeah, right? Because he would somehow get money that has not been appropriated by Congress.
Yeah. So the best plaintiff would be, I mean, a lot of the land that this, you know, wall would be built on is owned by private citizens. And so if one or more of those private citizens refuses to sell it to the government, then the government would have to use the eminent domain power to force a sale. And so that person, I mean, you clearly have standing if the government comes up to you and says, hey, that land you own, we're going to buy it from you, and you can't say no. So, like, there's no question that that person has standing. I also think that that's the best plaintiff because, like, you know, in political cases like this, they aren't about the law. They're about competing values. And you have to appeal to the values of one of the judges whose vote you're trying to get in order to convince that judge to be on your side. And so I think there's an off chance that if like a property owner comes into court and says, look, I am a property owner, guys, like, you love Ayn Rand, like, I'm the person you're supposed to be looking out for, so protect me. I think that there is an off chance that someone like Thomas or Gorsuch might be, you know, by Jove, I do love Ayn Rand. I'm not here to protect Muslims, but property owners, those are important people. So there's an off chance that I think, you know, one of the Republicans on the court could rebel. But realistically speaking, like, this is the court that upheld the Muslim ban. I think they're going to be very deferential to a Republican president.
And in that scenario we're talking about is months away, right? I mean, so the idea is that Donald Trump says, we're building the wall. I can do it. I'm getting the money from here or there. And he starts to build the wall or he doesn't. It doesn't, you know, from a political standpoint, it may very well be irrelevant, or I guess, you know, whether there's a legal recourse, because he just wants to say he's going to build it anyways. And that's basically it. I mean, I guess the question is, legally speaking, if he is allowed to do this, it seems like it might open up a set of can of worms, or no, for future presidents.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, like, let's be clear about what Donald Trump, at least like according to news reports, is contemplating. Donald Trump is saying that he can use the United States military to take people's land. I mean, think about that for a second. I mean, like, you don't have to be a crazy libertarian to you know, to listen to that. He wants to use the military to take people's land to be uncomfortable with that.
Isn't that like posse comitatus? I mean, isn't there, I mean, a whole raft of, I mean, aside from just sort of like, the, you know, sort of takings and eminent domain, like, isn't there, aren't there restrictions? I mean, I guess we saw that play out at the border when the military was sent down there. And I guess it was Kelly and maybe Mattis said, like, you can't really do that legally. And they just did it.
Right. Right, yeah. The Posse Comitatus statute says that you can't use the Army or the Air Force to enforce domestic laws. So, you know, you could argue that this violates that statute. I mean, there's a lot of really good arguments that you can raise. But again, in these politically charged cases, they don't operate at the level of laws. They operate at the level of values. And so what I'm hoping happens is that there's at least one Republican on the Supreme Court who thinks about this. Again, we're talking about the president ordering the military to take people's land, you know, and that should shock you. I mean, it should shock them. And like, these are people who are supposed to care about property rights. So I think that's the best shot of stopping Trump here, is to get someone like a Thomas or a Gorsuch to understand that, again, he wants to order the military to take people's land. You know, maybe that'll be enough, but I'm not optimistic.
Yeah, I will not hold my breath. Ian Millhiser, thanks for. I mean, well, so let me just ask you this, and this might be outside your portfolio, but from a political standpoint, he gets up there tonight. He announces that there's a national emergency, despite the fact that we found out the administration had to walk back the 4,000 terrorists crossing the border. It turns out there were six people over the past 2 years who were on the terrorist watch list, which, of course, you know, at one point, I think Senator Kennedy was on that list, too. So that list is of dubious nature. But nevertheless, so do you have a sense? And like I say, maybe this is outside your portfolio, but he announces, hey, I'm building the wall. I'm going to get the money from DHS and I'm taking it, you know, because it's national emergency powers from the, you know, this surplus budget, and we're going to build the wall. And so I don't care if you put it in the budget or not. I'll sign the budget. Is it, and then just we're done. The government shutdown is more or less over tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, there's the possibility is that Trump uses this as his out so he can end the shutdown before people start getting really mad because they aren't getting their tax refunds. I mean, maybe this is just his fig leaf that he's using. But the problem with this fig leaf is that, like, I don't know that this Supreme Court is going to get the joke. I don't know that they're going to realize that, like, the right. point of this is, you know, is to strike it down. You know, maybe they will. And, like, maybe they will understand. I mean, again, if the president can order the military to take people's land, then I don't know why President Elizabeth Warren can't say, okay, I'm going to order, I think it's a national security threat that too much banking power is concentrated in too few individuals. So I'm going to order the military to seize the banks. You know, I don't know why President Ocasio-Cortez can't say, you know, I think it's a national security emergency that poor people don't have adequate access to health care. So I'm going to order the military to seize a bunch of people's land so we can build public hospitals there. I mean, if the Roberts Court really wants to go there, then, like, you know, this can cut in ways that they're not going to like.
That doesn't necessarily sound too bad to me, but I guess we'll have to wait and see. Ian Millhiser, Justice Editor at ThinkProgress.org, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, there you have it, folks. Get ready. We now have the opportunity for President Warren and Vice President Ocasio-Cortez to use the military to start to expropriate land.
Yeah.
I guess there you go.
Hell yeah!
Now, of course, it's going to be done with the military. But do they redesign the military uniforms? They make them a little, like, everybody gets a red beret or something like that. What happens in that situation?
They have to dress like Yankee Doodle.
Is that it? So 9 p.m. Eastern tonight to for the speech by Donald Trump. I may hop on YouTube live streaming at the house if the kids are asleep by that point. You get some feedback from Myla on this tonight, but
we're gonna do a unlocked post game Mystery Science Theater of it as well.
Oh, is that right?
Oh yeah.
Okay,
you got it. I mean, this is like the full deployment of clown fascism. You can't ignore it.
We're gonna continue ignoring it.
I have a feeling it's not gonna be terribly dramatic. It's gonna, gonna get up. I'm gonna be so bored. This is gonna be written. I'm going to be sniffing so much Adderall. I'm just going to be able to get through this thing in about 30 seconds.
I wanted to have a Tony Montana moment, but they hemmed me in. Totally unfair.
Oh, this was a pretty good moment. I have to concede that I missed the Golden Globes this year, which is something I always do. I always make it a point of missing the Golden Globes. And then what I like to do is follow that up with missing the Emmys and the Grammys and the Oscars. I like to miss all of those every year.
But I catch the Tonys.
But the one I do like to watch is the ESPYs. No, I'm joking. Is that still around?
ESPYs gets emotional. They do montages very well.
Is it the ESPYs like they give awards to sports teams?
Hell yeah.
Okay. That to me seems a little bit redundant, because you're one of the ways that sports teams get awarded is they win, and then they win the championship.
There's a lot of random chance in sports.
That's true. This is for the deserving sports teams who happen to have lost to the deserving.
We want a democracy and not a meritocracy.
But nevertheless, there was a good moment in the Oscars, which I felt, I mean, not Oscars, the Golden Globes, which I feel like was missed, right? Because Fox and Friends yesterday talked about how what's his face from Veep, what was that actor's name again?
Julie Louis-Dreyfus?
No, not from Vice. I'm sorry, the actor from
Christian
Vice,
Bale.
Christian Bale. had said something political, and they were very upset about it because it was an otherwise non-political night.
Oh, that was great. They were like, oh, this is just, I like when they're like, you know, this is just great.
Just great.
Dick Cheney works so hard for this country. And, you know, you're just up there doing your movies, and you just got to be so rude.
So rude.
Anyways, but, the Golden Girls turns 40 this year.
Andy Samberg.
This is going to upset them, too.
Yeah, this is going to upset them, but I don't think they picked up on it. But they'll probably, it's a little late on the uptake on this one. But he was talking about the Black Panthers, I guess they won some awards. The group, the movie. And he had this to say, which I thought was pretty good. Not necessarily something I would expect from him, but maybe that's my own bias.
You know, if you told me as a kid growing up in the Bay there'd be a movie called Black Panther that starts off in Oakland, this is not what I would have imagined. Ryan, were there like a bunch of old members of the actual Black Panther Party saying, I can't even get an audition? Just kidding, they were all framed and murdered for wanting justice and equality. The world is and always has been a nightmare. It just seems worse now because of our phones. What else happened this year?
There you go.
Oh, that one really slipped under the radar.
Yeah.
Look at the way Yahoo Entertainment wrote up this bit. It says, if that sounds a bit awkward, well, it was. But not as awkward as Sandberg's attempts to poke fun at Black Panther director Ryan Coogler by asking if members of the actual Black Panther Party tried to audition for that blockbuster Marvel movie. Coogler's confused reaction spoke for all of us at home. I don't think he was confused.
That was definitely the main takeaway of that bit. Absolutely. It was an awkward moment.
Who wrote that on Yahoo? It wasn't Chris Rosen, was it? Please.
Oh, no.
No, I'm joking. I have a feeling.
Hi, this is Ethan Altus with Yahoo Entertainment.
I have a feeling Ethan just sort of like, quickly scribbled that off as he was he's writing up something.
Let's be more generous. Maybe Ethan went to go take a schvitz midway through that joke and he didn't get the punchline. Because you know what? If he didn't turn it into that joke, I guess it would have been kind of awkward. Like, if he didn't follow it up with a joke about COINTELPRO and it was just about, like, Eldridge Cleaver trying to audition or something, sure, I guess that
right.
would be awkward.
It would be.
Yeah, so maybe Ethan missed it. Maybe he's just lazy versus
That's what
absolutely
I'm saying. That's
stupid.
What I'm saying. He just like,
no,
you
I,
know, just
No, I've been, like,
scribbled
literally
it off.
Not in the, mo- in the room, though.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, I think that flies over a lot. People don't understand, like, who Fred Hampton is, right? Like, people have no idea of this history, really. A lot of white people, I'm saying.
Right, yeah, I was going to say a lot of...
Could the camera person not have found Mayo one Brian. Person who was having a big reaction to it? I feel like there had to be one.
He mentioned Ryan Coogler specifically, so that's why the camera went
to him.
He
said Ryan. He said he literally spoke to Ryan. But there he is. So good for Andy Sandberg. All right, let's take a quick break. Folks, a reminder, this program relies on its support from its members to function every day. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. And when you join themajorityreport.com, what happens is we give you extra content every day. And then, some extra content sometimes too. Not all the time, because we like to cap it at 6 hours or 7 hours a week. But sometimes we give
a little more. I wish we could apathetically
more.
Steamroll more of that content, frankly.
I don't know what that means. Apathetically steamroll it.
Explain to me how to use it properly.
Well, you wouldn't apathetically steamroll that content.
If you were complaining about the
amount
of
content. You would apathetically bulldoze that comment, because if you steamrolled it, it would simply flatten it. If you bulldozed it, you'd be pushing it out of the way.
I choose my words very carefully, Sam. And the Democratic performance was impotent and pathetic. You're scared. Your favorite communist, Claire McCaskill, lost her seat. And it's because of people like you who demonize those of us who support the president.
The conservative pushback is starting in North Dakota. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off from your Just Coffee, which is delish. Today is Tuesday. That means it is the night that the Michael Brooks show happens. Michael, tell us more.
Nomiki Konst is talking about her great campaign for public advocate. We will also have a little announcement about something we're doing with regards to that. LA teachers strikes, a little mini illicit history on strikes. And then we are going to, Dave Rubin Turkey. There's a bunch of stuff going on, but we're going to do Mystery Science Theater. Dave Rubin answered. Well, Erdogan just wrote an op-ed in the New York Times about his plans after Trump pulls out.
And Dave Rubin's plans?
Well, if Erdogan wasn't Muslim, I think like a sort of fascist, essentially like choreographing his plans for ethnic cleansing in the New York Times would be sort of peak IDW. So that's how I connected in my mind, at least. Then we're doing Mystery Science Theater coverage of the announcement tonight.
And
so around 7:10 or so, we're starting Michael Brooks Show YouTube channel, patreon.com/TMBS for everything.
Jamie, the Intifada?
The government. We all hate it. But what happens if it just decides to go away? Recently, I joked on the Majority Report that that would be cool. Others, like the anarchist collective Crime Think, have argued this point in earnest. In this very special patrons-only bonus, we read their article to that effect and point out some flaws in their reasoning, because while we all agree with their vision of a self-organized stateless society, we have a long way to go before that's possible, folks.
Long way to go. Matt.
Yeah, literary hangover. There's going to be a members-only hangover in the next couple of weeks, and then the next episode is going to be The House of the Seven Gables by Nathaniel Hawthorne.
There you go. All right, folks, a quick break, and 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.